Here it is, part three, the conclusion to the Marjorie Cameron analysis. Side effects of going further down the spiral. Today we conclude our journey into the life and times of Marjorie Cameron. We're going to go through a whole bunch of sort of side tangents of where her influences resided, how she penetrated the collective unconscious, influencing many. We're going to go through some interesting factoids about her. We're going to go through some ideas about Ludovico technique in Clockwork Orange. She gave her daughter LSD when she was 9 years old. Wavy Gravy. Polanski. Charles Manson sex tapes. Lucifer Rising. Peyote Vision. We're going to reveal the true story behind that piece of art. And, I mean, it goes into some pretty heavy-duty territory, and I know you're ready for it. So without further ado, let's do it. All right, we talked about Marjorie Cameron's upbringing, her childhood, and her role in Jack Parsons' Babylon workings, her role in the magical occult orders, her tangential inspirations through the different occultists, the Beat Movement, 60s, Dennis Hopper, Curtis Harrington, all kinds of weird stuff, right? And now we're going to finish off part three. Further down the spiral, the side effects of all of these various occultists. And we'll find out how all of her occult buddies fared in this new aeon. This is going to be more of a sort of shotgun blast of interesting factoids. But what it is it's truly a testament to Marjorie Cameron's pervasive influence, as well as the observable effects of how practicing these occult arts can influence one's life. Now, Cameron, she adhered to Joseph Campbell's saying, this is in the book, of course, this isn't me interpreting, because as you know, Joseph Campbell shows up with the monomyth, the hero's journey, the hero of a thousand faces, talked about that in the Star Wars conspiracy book, available on Amazon, Audible, all that stuff. So Cameron adhered to Joseph Campbell saying, quote, the person who takes a job in order to live, that is to say, for the money, has turned himself into a slave. Because she lived a true sort of bohemian artist lifestyle, sort of homeless most of the time. She hooked up with she had many suitors. One of them was Kenneth Anger. And what was curious was that they both at some point started taking hormone tablets, with Marjorie Cameron taking male hormones and Anger taking female, an attempt to become each other. Now, where have we heard this before? Well, Genesis P. Oridge. Genesis P. Oridge is a very interesting character. I've had some back and forth with Genesis. We've bounced some ideas off each other, and I hope to get Genesis on the show at some point here. We're trying to iron that out. In fact, Genesis was recently in the New York Times article just published a couple weeks ago, apparently, with the band Throbbing Gristle. Genesis created the industrial rock movement, if you don't know who that is. You should. Very interesting character. Very interesting person. But anyways, Cameron gave her 9-year-old daughter, named Crystal, not like crystal meth, her name was Crystal, but apparently she gave her LSD when she was only 9 years old. And as a result, she received a Mother of the Year coffee mug from Tim Leary and Dr. Oscar Janiger. That's a joke, of course, but I don't know if they would support that. I mean, 9 years old, that's pretty young. Don't even have time to turn on and tune in and drop out for that. Cameron read a book called The Heretic of Soana. This is a novella about a man, and his name is Ludovico. And Ludovico sold his soul to the devil. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is because I also wrote a book called Kubrick's Code, available, you know, all the places. And I examined this idea because I wasn't able to ever find what the Ludovico name came from. Because, as you know, Alex goes through the mind control experiments. They call it the Ludovico technique. And I thought maybe that comes from Ludwig's Violin concierto, taking the first few letters of each word, L-U-D-V-I-C-O. Ludwig's Violin Concerto, as Ludovico. But now I wonder, is Ludovico a reference to this book that Cameron was inspired by, about this man named Ludovico who sold his soul to the devil? Oh, man, we're going to have to rewatch the movies now, right? So Kenneth Anger, he introduced Cameron to Bobby Boucelet and Anton LaVey. Bobby Boucelet, of course, member of the Manson family. Anton LaVey, of course, founder of the Church of Satan. And LaVey cited Curtis Harrington's Nighttide film as one of the all-time greatest satanic films. We talked about Curtis Harrington in part two, Nighttide, that film that had Cameron, Anais Nin, Dennis Hopper. Wait, no. Anais Nin wasn't in that. That was Kenneth Grant's inauguration of the Pleasure Dome. Sorry. So, Kenneth Anger, why is he important in this? This is, again, and to re-emphasize, this third part is talking about all of the people that Cameron influenced and made contact with. So, Kenneth Anger was welcomed into the inner circle of the band The Rolling Stones, and Kenneth Anger claimed inspired the song Sympathy for the Devil. Now, I talked about the connections of the Rolling Stones and Kenneth Anger in the Star Wars conspiracy book. Would you like to hear about it? Well, here it goes. I'm going to read you the passage just to save you some time so you don't have to go read the book. You should. You'd be a lot cooler if you did. In the book, I wrote, most people are familiar with Altamont as the final death knell in the 60s hippie movement, with the Manson family murders being the first one. The reason for this is due to an 18-year-old African-American man named Meredith Hunter, who was stabbed and beaten to death by the Altamont security guards comprised of Hell's Angels bikers. Hunter drew a gun and attempted to get on stage after the Rolling Stones performance of Sympathy for the Devil. Interestingly enough, Stones lead singer Mick Jagger was previously dabbling in occult practices, like starring in Satanist Kenneth Anger's Invocation of My Demon Brother, along with Manson family murderer Bobby Boucelet. During the Altamont concert, Mick Jagger was attempting to calm the crowd down before they felt something dark and heavy taking over. Before the fatal stabbing, Jagger was referring to their performance of Sympathy for the Devil when he told the crowd, quote, "We always have something very funny that happens when we start that number." After the Altamont concert, Jagger turned down Kenneth Anger's offer as leading role in Lucifer Rising. Jagger apparently felt too close to evil to take on the persona of Lucifer after the Altamont stabbing. Author Joel Selvin confirmed this in Altamont, The Rolling Stones, The Hell's Angels, and The Inside Story of Rock's Darkest Day, when he pointed out the vast differences in their music after the life-changing 1969 event. Quote, "Coming face to face with its real life power for destruction was another," and sorry guys, let me back up. This is a podcast. We're just having a good time here, folks. Trust me, my Audible author narrated books are much more professional. Okay, let's take this from the top. I'm reading a quote from Selvin's book talking about this. Quote, "Coming face to face with its real life power for destruction was another, and it shook the band to their souls. They would never again risk such fearlessness, yet it was that exact fearlessness that had given their music such vivid, explosive power." Now, what's the point of reading all that? Well, you have to understand that when we talk about these occult forces and these dark realms and these satanic influences and the aliens and all this stuff, there is something going on outside of the five senses. We know that's happening. A lot of people don't get that, though. A lot of people don't believe it. Anyways, Cameron. Let's get back to Marjorie Cameron. She had a daughter named Crystal. It wasn't with Jack Parsons. The book doesn't go into detail if there was some kind of astral plane projection on there, because apparently she was, like I said before, when she would have sex, she would try to like mentally envision contact with Jack Parsons. but whatever, right? So she spent time with daughter Crystal on Wavy Gravy's hog farm and you know, the Woodstock thing, right? Now, of course, that's curious because there is apparently a 50th anniversary Woodstock in the planning phase in 2019. Just found that out. But who is Wavy Gravy? Well, again, this is a hippie icon from that hippie commune known as the Hog Farm. And hippie communes are curious because Aleister Crowley had the first one over in Cefalù, Italy, where he was doing all the sex magic rituals that Kenneth Anger and Dr. Alfred Kinsey went to go visit until Crowley was kicked out by Mussolini, right? Because he had heard that there was a child sacrifice there. Did it happen? I don't know. I wasn't there. So Wavy Gravy, he's this hippie, the hippie commune that was known as the Hog Farm. He's curious because he's friends with Paul Krassner from the Merry Pranksters. Now, in 1998, Wavy Gravy attended a neo-pagan symposium with Paul Krassner. Krassner's name comes up in Adam Gorightly's book, Shadow Over Santa Susanna. I had Adam Gorightly on the show a few months ago. He gave his last interview on Charles Manson with me. Can you believe that? How honored am I for that? Because that's what the Shadow Over Santa Susanna is about. It's all about Charles Manson and all the weird little occult connections. It's a fascinating book. Much better than all my books. Go pick it up. In Gorightly's book, Krassner, there is a tale about how his time at the... I can't even read my notes. I wrote COS. That could be Church of Scientology or the Church of Satan. I'm sorry. I'm letting you guys down here. I'm trying to conceptualize here. Anyways, he spent some time at one of those two groups. You'll have to read Gorightly's book. I don't know. And about how he had a contact in the LAPD that seized porno tapes from the Polanski residence after the murders, including sex tapes of Yul Brynner and Peter Sellers. And those two would later offer $25,000 for the capture of the tape murderers. And all that flows into the bigger idea that in Hollywood, there was some dark stuff going on, which makes sense if you look at the history. And that supposedly the Charles Manson Tate murders had a much darker purpose than the Helter Skelter theory that Bugliosi came up with. Because you do know that that's a theory he came up with, right? If you read his own book, he says he was kind of like grasping at straws and he came up with it. So it's very curious as to what really happened. What did they cover up? Now, another side note. There's a periodical called International Times, IT. And this was founded in London with donations from Paul McCartney. And in its 1969 January issue, they had an article on Crowleyan sex magic written by Kenneth Grant. Crowley's use of sex and drugs was very popular with the leading counterculturalists like John Lennon, again with the Beatles. And of course, Timothy Leary, with all that LSD stuff going on. Now, Kenneth Anger, he envisioned a war on the astral plane of Lucifer and his fallen angels on the side of the love generation of the 60s against the oppressive forces of the status quo, which can be interpreted as Christianity. Because Anger, being a, bisexual, perhaps, he, of course, would be against Christianity. His comment is interesting, though, right? Because Anais Nin wrote about the climax of the film, The Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome, and she wrote, quote, "Love became hatred, ecstasy became a nightmare," which the author of The Wormwood Star says could very well explain the 1960s. Love becomes hatred, ecstasy becomes a nightmare. Very curious, right? It's a very curious time. Now, there was... And again, we're going through all these little sort of factoid, interesting side facts about Cameron and all her influences. There was a book written in 1960 called The Morning of the Magicians. And it talks about the occult, Nazis, Crowley, And its alien theories that it talks about were used by Eric von Daniken in Chariots of the Gods. So there you go. Another idea that the Ancient Aliens crew has some occult agenda. If you didn't know that from the episode where they talked about how Lucifer wasn't such a bad guy. But this book is apparently the root source for claim, because I did a little side research. It was apparently the root source for claiming that Maria Orsic existed. She was the female entity used to channel the Vril alien force for the Nazis. I don't want to get on a side tangent, but that's very curious that this apparently is the source of the book. And so it makes me wonder if the Vril was indeed as prominent as we were led to believe. Another interesting side note, Marjorie Cameron smoked 50 cigarettes a day. She died of cancer in 1995, by the way. I don't know if it's lung cancer. Anyways, can't be good for you. So, Cameron, she, unlike Mick Jagger, appeared in Kenneth Anger's Lucifer Rising. What is Lucifer Rising? Well, it's a visual celebration of Crowley's Aeon of Horus. At the end, and I've seen it, you can watch it online, there's UFOs that fly over the Temple of Luxor, called by Osiris and Isis to signal the arrival of the crowned and conquering child, which is Crowley language for the Aeon of Horus. And the legend is that Horus flies to the sun on a great winged disc of colors. Now, this scenario correlates with Anger and Cameron's belief that UFOs come from this fourth dimension and not outer space, and they could be contacted and manipulated by magicians via the astral planes. Again, these occultists, they believe in ritual magic, they believe in a hidden dimension, they believe they can contact and channel energy and power from these aliens, from another dimension. Bobby Boussole, he recorded the soundtrack for Lucifer Rising, but he did it behind bars because he was in prison for the Manson murders, the first one, Gary Hinman. This was the only film soundtrack to ever do that. Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin originally recorded a soundtrack by Anger, but Kenneth Anger went with Boussole's. We talked earlier about Genesis P.O. Ridge when we talked about Kenneth Anger and Cameron doing the hormone pill swap. It says in the book that Crystal Cameron, again the daughter, was actually sort of given guidance by Genesis P.O. Ridge. Just an interesting side note. Now, let's finish it off. Let's talk about the end times for Marjorie Cameron. By the end of her life, Marjorie Cameron became fond of L. Ron Hubbard. Meanwhile, Kenneth Anger called him an elemental demon still. But it was apparently they'd reconcile their differences. Their opposites, as it were. But up, boom. So in 1916, there was a book called Woman and Superwoman. And it was about feminism viewed from a hermetic standpoint. And it charted the evolution of ages where masculine and the feminine took turns with dominant principles, according to the cycles of the zodiac. But Cameron's last interest included this theory of women's evolution since the prehistoric times. Now, at this point, Cameron was celebrating women's sexual power. And it was historical truths totally ignored by the feminist establishment. Women's sexual power eclipses all other power. It can bring the most powerful and wealthy men to their knees, quite literally. It can topple governments. Pagans not only acknowledge it, they revere it. It's sacred. That's from Cameron in an interview. Which is curious when we talk about Sabrina, or even American Horror Story Apocalypse, with the witches and the feminist movement. It's very clear that those shows are giving us an angle of female empowerment. Especially during the times of Brett Kavanaugh, when he got confirmed, even after his, his trial with PJ and Squee or whatever. And, the Me Too movement, it was kind of like prompting another sort of woman empowerment movement. Now, Cameron, she liked Aleister Crowley, even though he was a masculine, phallic person, a solar religious person versus the lunar. Of course, talking about male and female, solar being male, lunar being female. But the 60s revolution could have been sparked in the 40s by all of the illicit sex from World War II. This is just from an interview with Marjorie Cameron, some of her thoughts. She also thought the 60s sex movement acknowledged that they got the parenting movement all wrong, referring to absent fathers like Jack Kerouac and William Burroughs, many others. Now, it's revealed in the end of the book that the peyote vision artwork that we've been talking about so many times, this alien having sex with Marjorie Cameron, she reveals that it was a solar god penetrating Cameron. So that's very interesting, huh? A solar god. Isn't that a masculine god? The male powers? I don't know. We don't get any more out of the book other than that. It's also revealed that Crowley wrote about this spiritual revolution and these revolutionaries who would work on the inner planes, and from the outside we couldn't realize who they were, but they would have a tremendous effect on society. William Breeze said that Cameron believed she fit into this class as a leader of the feminist movement hidden behind the scenes. Cameron gave one of the first civilian UFO sightings back in 1946. She thought that the sighting was Jack's celestial confirmation that she was the chosen vehicle for Babylon. She believed that UFOs weren't necessarily high technology, but rather functions to reestablish paradise on Earth by restoring elemental powers that are available to the matriarchy. Again, we're talking about the feminist movement, only she seems to think the aliens are inspiration for that. Cameron's great-grandfather, Thomas Brentlinger, was a beekeeper. And this is where he shared Marjorie's belief that bees were carriers of magic. And I've been talking about this a lot in the past. We talked about this rise of the bee symbolism. You surely heard me talking about this with the Freemasons. They've got it in their artwork and iconography. The LDS Mormons, of course. The state of Utah is covered in bee symbolism. Beyonce's beehive, it's a symbol of the feminine principles and magic. American Horror Story Apocalypse, the witch coven leader, you can see wears a bee on the belt. So I was very curious, right? Now, Cameron has art called Hecas Hecas Este Bebeloi, which means far, far from here be the profane. This is a warning for the profane to depart before being forcibly banished. Where do you think this inspiration came from? Well, it came from the Golden Dawn rituals. Now, another curious connection here, and again, we're just kind of taking some factoids from the end of the book here. Curtis Harrington, the director of Night Tide, was actually friends with Gary Hinman. Isn't that strange? Because we were talking about Bobby Beausoleil and Kenneth Anger throughout this whole narrative. It makes you wonder what happened over there with the Manson murders. There's much more going on with it than what we were told. That's my point. But we're not here to talk about Charles Manson. We could all day, right? It's very curious. Between the bringing the birds back to life, just like Marjorie Cameron did. But Curtis Harrington, he was supposedly portraying in the film Night Tide a Lovecraftian Deep One sea creature. He apparently denies it in the book. But again, Beausoleil is the one that killed Hinman, and Kenneth Anger had Beausoleil in his films. He made the soundtrack to Lucifer Rising. And here in the book, Kenneth Anger, we find out, influenced Martin Scorsese and David Lynch, and is the godfather of MTV, as the book says. So, you know, Marjorie Cameron, she lived her final days pursuing this desire to fulfill matriarchy through magic, sort of prompting a feminist movement. She reconciled with L. Ron Hubbard, even Aleister Crowley, but she passed away at the age of 73 in 1995. Now, Cameron, she lived, obviously, an incredibly fascinating and full life. She is a prominent occult figure because she didn't just talk about it, she'd be about it. She was practicing magic rituals, she was seeing UFOs, she was messing around in the desert with people that were talking to aliens, she starred in these occult films about Lucifer, she influenced countless figures in this occult entertainment parallel, which is why we went on so many interesting journeys in this narrative here. So you can see the parallels between the occult belief system and the entertainment world. So we can see why she is viewed with such reverence from the people who are into this kind of thing. Now, I gave you my notes from the book, but if you're interested in Marjorie Cameron, there are a couple books about her. The one I read was The Wormwood Star by Spencer Kanza. Of course, available on Amazon or whatever. It's a pretty good book. So there you have it. That's it. That is why I took three different episodes of this podcast to talk to you about Marjorie Cameron, because she plays a critical role in the foundations and formation of the world as we know it today. We couldn't have Sabrina the Teenage Witch. We couldn't have all these witch stories from American Horror Story without her. She was indeed the Scarlet Woman of Jack Parsons' desires. Perhaps they're up in the astral plane making making the moon children as we speak. But anyways, I want to thank you for coming along with me on this journey. And thank you for learning about Marjorie Cameron and her interesting life. All right, that was it. Part three concluded. Now you know everything there is to know about Marjorie Cameron. You know, part of the reason I wanted to do that was because there's really not a lot about this woman out there, but her influence is felt far and wide. So, there you go. I wanted to get that down before the end of the year, as I promised you, and I delivered. So, thank you for your patronage, and thank you for being a part of the team. I probably don't say that enough, but it really is what's keeping this whole thing alive, so thank you. Not from only me, but all of the sheeple in the minds that you're waking up out there in the masses that stumble upon this content. So as always, be your best for those who deserve your best.